I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, this Thanksgiving Eve, Democrats are responding to news that voters in Washington state might have a chance to rid Washington of that costly carbon tax. Plus, when so-called crimes of poverty hurt those in poverty, whose side will the party in power take? And Seattle's Office of Economic Development launches an effort to lure you to downtown, except they made one glaring oversight. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. On the show this week, we've been talking about what I find to be very good news, a chance for working class Washingtonians to see a little relief at the gas pump. Maybe not in the next couple months, but I really believe that if this thing, Initiative 2117, goes to the ballot next November, that it will pass. And I think that's why we're seeing Democrats panic a little bit right now. So just to catch you up, there was an initiative run by Let's Go Washington, Initiative 2117, that would make the current cap and trade program in Washington state, which I call a carbon tax because I think that's the result of it. It has increased gas prices like 50 cents per gallon. So an initiative had been running, collecting signatures. They turned it in at an event yesterday down at a gas station in Kent, and they turned in something like 420,000 signatures, well over the threshold that they need to qualify. So basically what happens from here, it's an initiative to the legislature. So the legislature will have a chance to adopt it. I doubt they will because the legislature is under Democratic control and they're the ones that passed the carbon program in the first place. So what will probably happen is it'll go to voters next November. So now that the signatures have officially been turned in to the Secretary of State's office, we are starting to hear what the response from Democrats is going to be. And this is really no surprise. In fact, we had Brian Haywood, who is behind the initiative, in yesterday, and he said, I asked him that. I said, what do you think is going to be the, you know, the counterattack on this? He says, oh, they're going to say that we hate the environment, that getting rid of the cap and trade program and the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue that it brings in, it's going to kill the environment. It's going to derail all our climate goals. And that's exactly what's happening. State Senator Joe Wynn, who was a big proponent of the cap and trade system, a Democrat representing White Center, he released a statement on Twitter saying the investments funded by the Climate Commitment Act are already providing major benefits to the people of Washington. Washington is leading the way to a cleaner, greener future. And we can't stop our climate progress. We need to defeat climate change and rein in the pollution that the oil and gas industry is causing across our state and nation. The Climate Commitment Act is how we make that happen. You'll notice there's no mention there about the other implications of the Climate Commitment Act, which is putting a strain on working class people. So when Joe Wynn and other Democrats that have, you know, pulled out that argument, which again is what we anticipated, you must, if you supported this initiative, you hate the environment. A reminder that, you know, when Joe Wynn says Washington's leading the way to a cleaner, greener future, that's simply not true. We've talked about that on the show the last 2 weeks, and it's not just us. King 5, the King 5 investigators, and I would argue King 5 is the most liberal TV station in the city, they did this whole investigative report called Washington is Missing Key Climate Goals, advocates claim. And they also knocked the state and Governor Jay Inslee for a lack of transparency when it comes to missing those goals. In Washington state, people are recycling less, not more. Carbon pollution is up, not down, despite all these programs they've put into place and these goals that they've set. And the current carbon tax, it's bringing in more money than our state government ever imagined, so much so that they're going to have to genuinely search for ways to spend it all. And I think one of the things that's missing in this whole conversation is, can they do all the things that they want to do, you know, carry out their climate agenda, whether it actually is helping the environment or not, can they do it with existing funds? And I tend to think the answer is yes. Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center, he made this point as soon as folks were coming out of the woodwork yesterday saying this initiative is evil and anti-environment. He said, groups like Clean and Prosperous Washington that benefit from taxpayer subsidies in Washington's climate policy say science demands we must do more. However, those same groups and legislators don't require climate projects to be effective. They get the money, but no accountability for results. And of course, you would want these entities that exist to promote, you know, environmental solutions. And I say that word very loosely. Of course, they want billions of dollars to continue to come in in until the end of time. Again, more money than Washington state government even knows what to do with. And the idea that you have a group of legislators and these climate activists who think that the only possible way to improve the environment is to make working class people suffer, that can't be it. If that's the case, then you either need to find a different job, or we can replace you with people who can be more creative, or you need to really think long and hard about your priorities and where you're spending your money. So those responses, totally expected. I will say the response that bothered me the most, is still just grating on me today, is a tweet that was sent out by the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Shasti Conrad. And I find her words to be incredibly insulting to the roughly 420,000 people who at gas stations, who at grocery stores, took the time to sign this initiative. Here's what she said. She said, "I guess when you keep losing elections and you are do-nothing legislators, you try to buy policy. But we're not going to let them do that, Wash Dems. Decline to sign these ridiculous petitions." You try to buy policy. I guess when you keep losing elections and you are do-nothing legislators, you try to buy policy. Now, when you say try to buy policy, you're suggesting that, what, all 420,000 Washingtonians, registered voters who signed those petitions were bought and paid for? Now, it's true that Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington has invested a lot of his personal money into building a successful initiative gathering effort. It is true that it uses paid signature gatherers, but that is not outside the normal, and that is legally allowed for. In fact, I was reminded of the initiative that voters in this state passed in 2018, Initiative 1639, which had to do with gun control. And when I look back at that, so Initiative 1639, gun control, they started collecting signatures for it in 2018. And they started collecting those signatures to put this initiative on the ballot, despite the fact that Democrats were in control of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office in Olympia. So you couldn't get through these gun control policies on your own. Does that make you do-nothing legislators, as you're now accusing Republicans of? I mean, Republicans don't have control of anything. So yeah, they can't do much of anything. But you guys had, in 2018, full legislative control, control of the governor's office, and you couldn't push through your gun agenda. And so there was an initiative gathering effort to put Initiative 1639 on the ballot. And you know what you did to get enough signatures? You used paid signature gatherers. So are you now, because you're do-nothing legislators, did you in 2018 try to buy policy? You did the exact same thing in 2018 to push through gun control policies and have voters weigh in on them that Let's Go Washington is doing now with this initiative to try to repeal the carbon tax. And I'd also note that when signatures were turned in for 1639 in 2018, there were far fewer signatures. They turned in 360,000 signatures. Let's Go Washington just turned in 420,000. Yet when it's an initiative, Shasti Conrad, chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, that you don't agree with, politically speaking, that seeks to undo something that your party has done, you say that it's buying policy. But it wasn't buying policy in 2018 when it was an initiative you agreed on. I mean, these arguments are so easy to discount. They are so deeply hypocritical. And it's also incredibly offensive to Washingtonians who have a constitutional right to initiative and to referendum. This is a right built into the Constitution that Washingtonians, if they gather together in enough numbers to push back against a policy they do not like, or to come up with a policy that they do like that lawmakers will not pass, they have a constitutional right to do this. And for the chair of the state Democratic Party, when they use that constitutional right to pursue an agenda she doesn't agree with, all it is an effort to buy public policy. Because in her words, I guess you keep losing elections. You know, all we've heard for the past freaking 7 years is Democrats say, Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. Republicans are a threat to democracy. You're spitting on democracy. And you've been doing that with the initiative and referendum processes for the last 2-3 years. Anything that comes up that pushes back against your policy agenda the Democratic Party and county Democratic Party members were out, you know, during the collection process for referendum 101, protesting it, getting in the face of signature gatherers, saying report the location of signature gatherers when people were collecting signatures to repeal the capital gains tax. That's not a threat to democracy. I mean, how convenient for you. How convenient for you to be able to pick and choose, to be able to pick and choose what aspects of democracy are okay with you, when it's okay for someone to exercise their constitutional rights. And for Shasti Conrad, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, it is only okay to exercise your constitutional rights if you are someone she agrees with politically. For the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Shasti Conrad, it is only okay for citizens of Washington State to gather signatures for an initiative or a referendum if she agrees with the initiative or referendum. And that is a really, really sad thing. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about this wonderful Cairo 7 news report. You guys know what is the word I'm looking for? I don't give credit a lot to the mainstream media for their reporting because I think a lot of it's really, really lazy. But when there's good things like the King 5 report we talked about last week, I really do want to give them credit for investigative reporting because I think it also encourages some of these newsrooms to invest in it more and to give some of their really good reporters time to do this kind of work. So we'll talk about a great investigative report on crime and who is being victimized the most in Washington State. But first, this is going to be quite the segue. It is Thanksgiving tomorrow, and I am sure that the last thing you're thinking about is embarking on a weight loss journey, but maybe you'll be thinking about it on Friday as you're contemplating the 6 to 7 pieces of pumpkin pie that you ate. So this time last year, I started my journey on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. Thanksgiving be damned. Christmas be damned. And yeah, I had to make some sacrifices. Couldn't go back for that second helping of pie or mashed potatoes with gravy. But you know what I'm not thinking about today, a year later, 37 pounds down? I'm not thinking about what I didn't eat for Thanksgiving last year. I'm thinking about how good I feel. And so it might feel like a sacrifice to embark on a weight loss journey when you think about, oh, I've got this coming up. But I promise you, all of that will be overshadowed when you prioritize your health and you see the true benefits of that. So if you've been thinking about starting the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, don't wait to make it a New Year's resolution. We know no one ever sticks to those anyway. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. You can schedule a free 15-minute virtual consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. Ask him all the questions you have and then decide if you want to commit. All right, we know that crime disproportionately hurts the poor. And one of the themes that we've seen, you know, certainly on the Seattle City Council, we've seen it trickling down to Olympia and to Democratic lawmakers, is this idea that we really need to take it easy on people who commit quote unquote crimes of poverty. You know, that some of these crimes, be it, you know, theft and vehicle prowls, are crimes of poverty, the crimes that are only being perpetrated because the suspect is poor. And so they want to look at that and say, oh, you know, just give them a little slap on the wrist and send them on their way. But what they don't consider is when crimes of poverty are hurting the poor, then who do they prioritize? Then who matters more, the poor criminal or the poor victim? And there have been a couple stories, you know, I just saw one of the things that reminded me of this and made me really want to talk about the Cairo 7 story today is this story from Fox 13 News that came across. Thieves steal $12,000 worth of tools from homeless housing organization. Okay, Democrats, who do you feel worse for? Whose side are you going to be on? Are you going to be on the side of criminals who steal $12,000 worth of tools? Which people like Lisa Herbold on the Seattle City Council would say, well, that's just a crime of poverty. You know, they're going to sell those tools and they're going to use that money to feed their families. I mean, remember when she introduced, she wanted to introduce a measure that would basically give any misdemeanor, anyone who could use poverty as a defense for any misdemeanor could like get off the hook? Wild stuff. Or are they going to have the back of a homeless organization doing important work for people who are impoverished and say, no, we're not going to allow people to continue to victimize you? So that brings me to this Cairo 7 story by Gary Horker, who does great work. And again, I'm just glad that one of the issues with mainstream and corporate media in the world that I came from is you have newsrooms that are giving less and less time to true journalists to do journalism. They're doing a lot of press release journalism, where it's like, we just got to pump this story out. Like, a government agency sends out a press release, let's just put it on the air, change it a little bit. And you have still some of these news stations with reporters who've been around for a long time, who, if given the time and the leeway to be able to spend a couple weeks investigating something, can come out with very meaningful stories, like the King 5 story on Governor Jay Inslee's missed climate goals. So Gary Horker and Cairo 7, they set out, given, you know, the rising crime rates, to find out, okay, where is some of this crime happening the most? And when it comes to the victims of crime, are there any similarities? And what they found is that, in fact, most of the victims of the crime that's happening are people who are least able to deal with the ramifications of that crime, and that's poor people. Here's part of his report.
We broke down data from Snohomish, King, and Pierce counties, and we found a clear pattern. Where most crime is concentrated, victims tend to have less income, and one car break-in can leave a person with life-changing losses. Sergeant Darren Moss backed up our research, saying car thefts tend to victimize people in income-challenged areas, and those crimes become magnified.
Homicides, armed robberies, burglaries. I want you to look at every single major crime we have, and there's a stolen vehicle in there somewhere.
Where do you start? What's the answer?
People are being released. People are not being held. People are not being held accountable for the crimes they're committing. They know the game. They're playing by the rules that we allow them to play with.
They're playing by the rules that we allow them to play with. I could not say it better myself. And so you have these Democrats in Olympia that are pushing really soft on crime policies. You have cities like Seattle that have done the same, that I pray to God they're going to try to roll back. And what that does is it gives people the okay to go out and victimize other human beings. And unfortunately, not that I want anyone to be a victim, but unfortunately, this reporting shows that people who are most likely to be victimized are the poor, are the underprivileged. And isn't that the exact population that Democrats claim to be helping in some weird, twisted way with these soft on crime policies? So Gary Horker also told the stories of two women. One of them lives in Pierce County, and what she has gone through as a lower income Washingtonian is heartbreaking.
Michelle Noel is disabled from a back injury, but after thieves tried to steal her new Kia, her main source of daily income as an Uber and Lyft delivery driver was suddenly smashed and trashed. Michelle lives in a limited income apartment in North Tacoma, where crime data shows us the number of car thefts and car prowls are very high, and this one left her with limited options.
$500 deductible for insurance, plus 2 weeks worth of lost work is another $1,500, $2,000. And when you're poor like this at the bottom end, you don't recover from things like that.
But just when Michelle thought she had recovered, it happened again, and she could hardly believe it. 12 weeks later, thieves tried and failed to steal her car from the same lot. This time, she was left with no income to pay her deductible or her car loan.
I just rebuilt my credit, and now it's gone again. My credit is gone again after 5 years of rebuilding it.
And Cairo 7 also looked at areas of high crime based on the data in King County,
where we noticed extremely high numbers of stolen car reports and assaults sticking out in a non-urban area just east of Federal Way, so we zoomed in. Turns out this is a new sprawling affordable housing complex for people with limited or no incomes.
11 cars in this complex was broken into.
And that was all in one night?
Yep, all in one night.
I have to, and genuinely, it's a genuine question for Democrats who supported, for instance, dramatically limiting the ability of police to pursue stolen vehicles. I remember sitting down on the floor watching the debates over this, hearing Democratic lawmaker after Democratic lawmaker suggest that vehicle theft was a victimless crime, that it's not a violent crime, and, oh, you shouldn't pursue that person because it's just property. It's just a property crime. And seeming to not truly understand what that quote-unquote property crime means for someone who has no money. Who has no money. And maybe you haven't been there. Maybe you haven't been in a position where something like that, like you heard from the woman who lives in Tacoma, that is make or break for you. Having your vehicle stolen is make or break for whether you can earn a living. And so I just have to ask the Democrats who said those things and who supported those policies, were these unintended consequences? what you hear in that Cairo 7 story? Are those unintended consequences? I would hope you'd say yes. I'd hope you say that, of course, we don't want our policies to contribute to an environment where poor and marginalized people are being victimized at higher rates. I would hope that's unintended. But if it's unintended and you care about it and it bothers you, then you would fix it, right? Then you would come back this legislative session and say, hey, some of these policies we've supported, the real soft stance that we've taken on crime, we need to send a stronger message because it's having these unintended consequences. And if you don't do that, I can only believe that they are intended consequences or that you simply don't care because it's serving a larger ideological agenda. And that's really disappointing. And if that's the case, then you need to be called out on it more. If that's the case, then people who are living in poverty, marginalized communities, which also, by the way, in these areas that Gary Horker pointed to, also happen to be areas with a higher population of people of color, another community that you claim to care about. And those are the communities that need to know that if you don't change these things, then you don't truly care about their health and their safety and their well-being and their financial stability. Because we know, again, in the Gary Horker wonderful investigation, I really highly recommend you go watch the full video. This just proves what people with common sense already suspected. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, Seattle's Economic Development Office has touted downtown success, trying to get you to go shopping there for the holidays, except they made one critical oversight. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, wonderful real estate agent in our area. By the way, we talked about it yesterday. If you're a landlord who's like, I need to sell my rental property in Seattle or Tacoma, highly recommend you giving Wes a call, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. I know that he's been working with a lot of to-be former landlords who just simply can't do it anymore, but I digress. Wes and his team at Wes Jones Associates, they offer a lot of cool things you're just not going to see from a traditional real estate agent. One of them is called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where if you've got something that needs to be fixed on your home, at your house, before you put it on the market, not only can his team help with that, manage the project, they could even help pay for it up front. I did ask him, though, are there any limitations to that?
There is a certain dollar amount that I can go to. Mm. If there is something that is bigger than that, we do have some other resources that are available that we can tie into, kind of like a line of credit. But there hasn't been anything that we have not been able to handle yet. And if you guys have questions, you know, let me know. Mm. Or if you've got a project, you're like, gosh, can this guy handle it or not? Just fire it over. I'd love to have that conversation and have somebody stump me with something.
Yeah, and he really loves that stuff. He's a son of a builder, so they're looking for those projects and those homes. So if you're thinking about putting your home on the market, maybe it's your personal home, maybe it's a rental property in Seattle and Tacoma that you're like, not doing that anymore, visit sellwithwes.com and do three things. Ask Wes for a free market analysis. You can see how your home is positioned depending on the neighborhood. Make sure that you ask about his Listing Boost Concierge Service. But the very first thing you should do is use their free home value calculator. Just plug in your address, see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Seattle's Office of Economic Development really wants to tout some of the work they're doing to revitalize downtown Seattle. They talked about that work on social media, except they made one glaring oversight when they did. Let's get to it in our segment. Unfreaking believable. Seattle's, Economic Development Office, God bless that office, they got some work on their hands, but they started this campaign where you can go to this website and, you know, see what they're doing, what they have planned to revitalize downtown and give them any feedback. It's called the Downtown is You campaign. Daryl, can you show this video? It says, downtown is green, downtown is home, downtown is exciting, downtown is buzzing, downtown is vibrant, downtown is working. Downtown is you. Okay. I love that their first thing there is downtown is green. Like, look, again, I love Mother Earth, okay? I love the great outdoors. When I think of downtown Seattle, I don't think of green. I don't think of environmentally friendly. When I think about the state's biggest city that has, like, pee and crap on the sidewalks and trash everywhere and encampments and people bent over with the Fetty Leans. I just don't think of that. I don't people throwing the Lime bikes into Puget Sound. I just, green doesn't come to mind. It also isn't like what if I'm contemplating visiting or doing business in Seattle, I'm not thinking, yeah, but is it green? If it's green, then I'll totally go downtown and go shopping again. No, I'm thinking, is it safe? And you notice, can you play that video again, Daryl? I'm just, did I miss, did it say safe anywhere on there? Downtown is green, home, exciting, buzzing. Buzzing with what? Police sirens? buzzing, vibrant, working for whom? Yeah, you notice it doesn't say downtown is safe, because it's not. And look, there are things I like about Seattle, and I do think Seattle is redeemable, and I do want to say that. You know, Seattle has these great bones. The waterfront is beautiful, and what they've done down there is tremendous, and this idea to connect downtown to the waterfront, I think, is should have been done years and years ago. You know, the mountain is still there. Even if it's clouded by fentanyl smoke, it's still there. So the bones of Seattle are good. It is redeemable, and I don't want to act like, yeah, I was just down there the other day at Nordstrom, mostly because our friend Johnny was down there and I went to visit him. But so I'm not saying that everything's bad in Seattle. You should never shop there. You should never go there. I just tend to think it's just not very safe or welcoming. So anyway, in an effort to get people, you know, to shop small and local this holiday season, which I think you should, Seattle's Office of Economic Development sent out this tweet. Small businesses reflect our city's rich diversity, uniqueness, and creativity. Shop small and local this holiday season and experience the magic of downtown retail like never before. The only issue, Daryl, do you have the tweet? There's one little problem. It's got this picture with it. It says downtown is buzzing over this picture. But a lot of eagle-eyed users on X noticed that that is a picture of Ballard. That is a picture of restaurants in the Ballard neighborhood of Seattle, which is most decidedly not downtown. So in this whole tweet about shopping, experiencing the magic of downtown retail, shopping small and local, and experiencing downtown's rich diversity and uniqueness, they included a picture of a neighborhood that is absolutely not downtown Seattle. Couldn't find one picture of downtown Seattle to show that it's welcoming for the holiday season, to show that it's rich with uniqueness and creativity. Not a surprise to me. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, talking about holiday shopping, we made this the subject of our daily subscriber poll. If you'd like to weigh in on key issues before the show every single morning, sign up on Patreon or Locals. The question I posed to you guys is, with Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday right around the corner, holiday spending will be a key indicator of how Americans are feeling about the economy. How will your holiday spending this year wow, Brandy, you wrote this question. You can't even read it. How will your holiday spending change this year over last? Let's see, a few comments. Chris over on Patreon said, I feel like I want to puke when I think about the economy. Two bags of groceries yesterday cost me $50. Theodore Cartwright, hard not to spend more when everything cost way more than it did before, which is true. You could buy, this is what Hydro Dog said over on Locals. Of course I'm going to spend more this year. I have to just get the same. Of course, Brandy, you can read. You can read. You can do this. Hydro Dog says, of course I'm going to spend more this year. Have to just to get the same amount as last year, which again is true. Even if you buy the exact same amount of things that you bought last year for Thanksgiving or Christmas, it is going to cost you more. Jacob says, for those of us living in the greater Seattle area, shopping on Amazon is technically shopping local. I think that's true. Well, Amazon shopping's shopping local. A lot of you, though, on Patreon and Locals said that you do plan to spend less. A majority of people say you plan to spend less. I think this is something we'll probably talk about Zach Abraham with on the show next week, since we don't have a Thursday show this week, sort of after we see what the spending was like on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday. What does that indicate about the state of the economy, about consumer spending, and what might it foreshadow? So thank you for those responses. Continue to take that poll, because I'm very curious to see where it ends up. All right, speaking of Zach Abraham and the team at Bulwark Capital, again, we have him on every Thursday. I texted him today and just said, hey, we'll talk to you again next week. enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday. But Zach has been talking a lot with us on the show about, you know, what he really fears is going to be some incredibly tough economic times at the start of next year. And what they specialize in at Bulwark Capital is managing risk. And the worst time to manage risk in your retirement portfolio is when it's too late. And so Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital, so knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, he really encourages everyone, whether you're just starting to plan for retirement or whether you're already in retirement, to think about managing your risk as soon as possible.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, it's, we don't think, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah, and I think you need a portfolio that's actively managed so that when there an economy exists where you can take a little more of a risky approach to be able to increase returns, there's a time and a place to do that. Zach Abraham does not believe that now is the time, and so it's definitely worth a conversation with him to look at what is the risk you're exposing your hard-earned retirement to and how can you mitigate that risk. So if you want advice from Zach, or you can just listen to his radio show every week as well, visit knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. That man is a wealth of knowledge. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State. I just want to follow up to a story I believe we talked about on the show Monday that just terrified the heck out of me. It was our unbelievable segment on Monday. In California, state lawmakers have passed a law that requires California teachers teach media literacy in public classrooms. This was the article from the Seattle Times. It said state leaders in California have a, quote, strong interest, the new legislation says, in ensuring young Californians are equipped to properly confront the misinformation found on digital platforms. Except the backer of the bill said that when he was referring to misinformation, he's like, from climate denial to vaccine conspiracy theories to the January 6th attack on our nation's capital, the spread of online misinformation has had global and deadly consequences. And to me, just in the things that he named in giving a justification for the bill he proposed that ultimately passed, I thought, of course, if a state like California is going to teach media literacy to kids, it's all going to be about right-wing disinformation, and it's not going to look at any of the disinformation or misinformation coming out from the left. It's certainly not going to be something that truly equips kids to be able to navigate an ever-growing, ever-confusing media landscape, because it is hard. And it's even hard for adults, by the way, to be able to navigate what's true and false. But it certainly does not help when you have a politically motivated government that is one party that is going to decide what kids need to be taught when it comes to media literacy. And then I just saw this out on social media that Governor Kathy Hochul in New York has just ordered that the same thing be done there.
Today I'm directing the Director of Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services to develop media literacy tools for K through 12 in our public schools. This will teach students and even teachers to help understand how to spot conspiracy theories and misinformation, disinformation, and online hate. Start talking about what we're seeing out there. Give the teachers the tools they need to help these conversations in school. And by teaching younger New Yorkers about how to discern between digital fact and digital fiction, we can better inoculate them from hatred and the spread of it, and help prepare them for a very fast-moving and often confusing world.
Inoculate them from hatred, just hatred from the right? What about hatred from the left? I don't trust you to do it. The same way I wouldn't, by the way, and I'll talk about it, my sister and I had this conversation kind of on Florida Report today. I wouldn't trust someone like Gavin Newsom or Ron DeSantis to do that either in Florida. Not one bit would I want Florida and Ron DeSantis teaching kids their media literacy. I don't think it's something that politicians should be involved in at all, especially in today's climate. And when she talks about, you know, protecting them from conspiracy theories, I keep going back to all the quote unquote conspiracy theories in the last 3 years that people were, again, alienated and called conspiracy theorists for that turned out to be true. And then all of a sudden the mainstream media picks up on those stories and we forget that you had a whole swath of people who were absolutely vilified for spreading quote unquote conspiracies. So no, the government is not going to be the entity to teach kids to be critical thinkers, independent-minded, and to look for facts and redundancy when they are consuming media. The government ain't it. I don't care what government, what political ideology the government is. All right. As I mentioned, Thursdays, we usually talk to my sister and check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. But tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and I am not going to make her work on Thanksgiving, mostly because I'm not working on Thanksgiving either. So it's Wednesday, but let's still check in on what's happening in Florida.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, happy day before we all shove our faces with carbs.
My favorite holiday of the whole year.
What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
I like mac and cheese, and I like cranberry sauce, which is debatable for many Americans, but I do enjoy it.
Let's see if you know me well enough. What's my favorite Thanksgiving dish?
You like mashed potatoes.
Good. See, I know you know. It's really a problem, actually. It's a disease. Okay, so your guys' legislative session is just over a month away. Ours is just over a month away in Washington State. They're going to be very, very different, which will be entertaining. Yeah. There's been a bill pre-filed in Florida that has to do with state agencies and gender pronouns.
Correct. So a Republican representative has filed a bill that would make it basically like you, if you work in a government building or with a government agency, you can only use the pronouns of the gender you were born with.
You were laughing earlier, like they can't stop. They just won't.
We just can't stop, won't stop. I mean, you know, at some point it's got to, stop, you know, but they definitely are attacking this from whatever angles they can. And I don't know at what point it becomes infringing on a First Amendment right when they could just leave well enough alone and let people just exist in the world and however they want. I don't know. It's a very confusing thing.
Yeah, I'm starting to kind of question Florida's version of freedom, certainly, and some of these like this real focus on culture war issues. And don't get me wrong. I mean, what I think the appropriate balance here is you can't mandate it, right? You shouldn't be able to mandate a government worker that they have to, regardless of their beliefs, call someone by their preferred gender pronouns. That to me would be fine. But this really does take it a step further in basically not even allowing someone in the workplace to use that person's preferred gender pronouns if they want to. Like, hey, if you don't mind, I don't mind. Like, I'll call you whatever you want to be called. And I just feel like it goes too far, like a lot of things that we've seen out of Florida lately.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It definitely just seems like an endless game at this point where there's so many other things Florida needs to focus on, like our insurance crisis, et cetera. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it just really, it's almost a turnoff to moderates and to independents, because then people point to stuff that's happening in Florida as the extremist, you know, Republican agenda, where if you just pass something that's common sense, like, hey, you can't force someone to, like a state employee to use that, that doesn't make any sense. And then people, that's reasonable, that's rational. Speaking of, you know, oh, fringe right-wing Florida, Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis, we talked about this on the show yesterday. On November 30th, they're going to have a debate on Fox News. I'm somewhat interested because of the vast differences between California and Florida. But do you think it's beneficial to Ron DeSantis?
I don't think it's beneficial to any of us, even as viewers, because at the end of the day, of course, it's going to be a debate. Like, it could just be a meeting and it's going to be a debate. They're so different. Our states are so different. Their politics are so different. They're dead set on being different from each other that there's no, I don't think there's any common ground to find. I think it would be more appropriate to approach the conversation of like, here's what works in my state and why, and here's what works in my state and why, and like, just maybe try to learn something from each other or like come to a common ground of like, we just have different politics and this is why they work or don't work in our states. But I'm not really looking forward to them just arguing for the sake of arguing, because at this point, it just kind of feels like that's what it is.
Yeah, and they're both so ingrained in the way that they do things, and they're going to kind of, you know, show and talk about what's best about their state and try like hell to ignore what's not going so well. And I think most people who tune into that, they're going to have their minds made up. I don't think there's like a lot of Ron DeSantis fans or Florida fans who are going to be swayed by anything Governor Newsom says. And the opposite is true as well. If anything, I mean, again, I think Gavin Newsom is going to eventually be the Democratic nominee for president. I don't know how they're planning to swing that in the next few months, but I think it's going to happen. I just don't see what's in it for Ron DeSantis, because right now Newsom's not in the race. He should be trying to stand out from the Republican field, not trying to stand out against someone who's not even in the race.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is maybe he's trying to really appeal to maybe some of those California voters that don't really have a place in California, don't feel like they're being represented. But I don't think that he needs to debate their governor for them to find him or find information on his politics. So I hope it's like somewhat of a productive, I know it's going to be 90 minutes, so I can't imagine what they're going to talk about for 90 minutes, but I hope something good comes out of it. I don't know. I think it's, you know, it's just kind of, it seems so like wasteful at this point.
I mean, like I said yesterday, though, I'll watch it. I'm still going to watch it.
So, of course we're going to watch it.
It's been a difficult year for you. So why don't we end with talking about what you're grateful for this Thanksgiving Eve?
I'm grateful for all the same things I am every year, but I think even more so and more like genuinely, I'm grateful for healthy lungs, fresh air. I'm pretty bummed I'm not going to be with family this year, but I'm going to be with friends. And that's when you live far away from your family, that's your second family anyway. I'm just grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be recovering. I'm grateful to be on the show. I'm grateful for all the people who are fans of the show and Florida Report that sent me all those prayers and good wishes. My list is endless this year, so I could go on and on, but I'm just pretty much grateful for the sun rising and setting every day at this point.
Yeah. And although we won't be together for Thanksgiving, we'll be together for Christmas back home in Minnesota. So we have that to look forward to.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Love you, sister dearest. Thank you so much.
Love you. Bye. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Sort of. I don't know, Ron. I might have to take that out if you keep this up. All right. For those of you who might be looking to save a little bit of money, which I'm sure is a good chunk of you given the direction of things, I've been talking about the First Mark Insurance First Mark Challenge because I do think it's an opportunity to see, are you paying too much for your insurance when you don't need to? It's not about going out and getting cheap insurance. It's not going to do you any good. The beauty of First Mark and what Mike and I did when we took the First Mark Challenge in the spring is we went to them with our goals. You know, we knew we were woefully underinsured. We were about to get married. And so they went out, they shopped the market for us. We've never paid First Mark Insurance a dime for their services, which is awesome. But sometimes they have people who come to them and say, look, I need to see if I can get, you know, keep good insurance, but save a little bit of money. And I've heard from so many of you who are saving $100, $200 a month, and you see how much that adds up. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says that they can look at the options for you, but he did issue a word of caution that they cannot do it in 15 minutes or less.
How much time did it take for you?
Couple hours.
Okay. So
total.
All in a couple hours. Yep. From the time we gather the information, do the presentation and go through everything, it's a couple hours of time.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end.
Yeah.
Right.
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
A little chatty. Yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out. And there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a First Mark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, and even though you have to invest a little bit of time to do this, I would argue the investment is going to pay off. But also, every single year, they're proactively looking back at all your policies, making sure you have the best price, making sure that you're covered for whatever changes might have happened in your life. So that's going to save you from having to do that every year. So if you're not a First Mark client yet, or if you haven't at least taken the First Mark challenge, make some time to do it before the new year. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is that they work for you, not the insurance companies. You can be sure that they're looking out for your best interests. All right, Daryl, by popular demand. So when we first hired you to be our tech guru.
Yep.
I was telling people that I've known you longer than Nicole.
Almost a decade now.
More than a decade.
More than a decade. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, roughly a decade. You're right. You're right. 9 years. Because I was going to... And people, I was like, Daryl and I... So my best friend from college, Johnny, joined the Navy, gets stationed in Japan, and that's how we met. Mm-hmm. And so I remember coming out, visiting you guys, hanging out in Japan. Yep. And people are like, we need to see a picture. We found the picture.
We found a
picture. Of like one of the first times I met Daryl... From 2014, if you're not watching the show today, you are missing out. Because look how young we look. Look at that. Look at that fresh-faced young man, blonde hair. Although my hair is getting long again. I'll never probably go back to that blonde.
No. Yeah, I think this was, I think I just had one deployment under my belt.
Yeah. So that might have been the first or second time we met, but it was this, I looked at the date of the picture, it's 2014.
Yeah.
Just wee babies. And look at us now.
Look at us now, huh?
Isn't the world a crazy place?
It is. It really, if you think about it, what matters is friends, family, country.
Country, good.
You know?
Good one, Daryl.
You got to, because yes. I mean, without the, come on, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier in Japan, only America.
That's true. But also, speaking of friends, I will say I miss Nicole.
I do too. Before we show Nicole, here's another picture.
Oh.
That's me and my dad.
Oh my gosh, look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that little, what kind of uniform is that?
That's the dress whites.
Okay, because that's like when a ship comes into port, you guys will all be standing around the ship.
Yep. Manning the rails, that's what it's called.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Actually,
so handsome.
I think they're called themming the rails now.
They're called what?
Themming the rails. Oh. No, they're still called manning.
Was good, Daryl. I didn't expect that from you. Nice. Them in the rails. Zaring the rails.
Boop.
Okay. But I was going to say, I missed Nicole, and so I checked in on her yesterday because I figured people might be missing Nicole too.
They are.
She sent some pictures because she's in Costa Rica, and she sent some bathing suit pictures. Nicole, risque. Yes. She said, volcanoes, hot springs, the most amazing sunset, and sloths. Of course she found sloths. That I'm not allowed to snuggle. Monkeys have been hiding from me. They're tomorrow's mission. She says, thank you for supporting my obnoxious travel bug. She says, the place is awesome. I know I say that a lot, but wow, it's so pretty. And she'd sent me some videos of like the ocean waves and stuff. And so it seems like she's having a really good time. And then she tried to text me about work and I was like,
ignore.
No. So I'm glad Nicole's getting some like fresh.
Yeah.
And she said the ocean there is so warm.
Oh, that's nice.
So I was like, you're rubbing it in at this point. That's nice. Because we're all sitting here freezing. But of course we miss Nicole.
Miss her so much.
But she works hard. She deserves a vacation. Okay. Questions and comments from the live stream. A couple super chats. Thank you. I'm grateful for your super chats. Bill Biz with the $20 super chat. Happy Thanksgiving all. One day of shopping, one day of cooking, one day of cleanup. Costa Rica sounds like a better idea. Yeah, I do agree with that.
And then we have another super chat. Brent Davis. Just remember, when they say threat to our democracy, they actually mean it. We threaten the democracy that they don't want us to be a part of.
Yeah, democracy is just fine as long as they're the only ones participating.
That's true.
On Thanksgiving, Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says, Brandy and Dee, my daughter's question for you both today is, thank you. I never get questions. Never get questions.
Yeah.
What is each of your favorite Thanksgiving pie? My dad's is sweet potato pie. Jenny's is chocolate silk. Julietta's is key lime. I mean, mine is pumpkin, right?
Mine is sweet potato.
So you make a really good sweet potato pie, which I've had before. Mm-hmm. So I don't, it's, sweet potato is very similar in flavor to pumpkin, in my opinion.
Okay.
Texture, all that.
You know, color similar. I feel like the flavor, I mean, at the end of the day, it's as much butter, sugar, and seasonings you could put in
exactly.
it.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
That's what really makes it shine.
So the pie I don't like cooked fruit.
No?
I only like it if it's, so I don't like chunks of cooked fruit.
Mm.
To me, it's like fruit shouldn't be hot.
So no apple pie for you.
I mean, look. Will I eat it? Yes.
Yeah.
But is it my first choice? No. All right.
Un-American Brandy hates apple pie.
I know. Kim Taylor says, my grandniece's first birthday is tomorrow. She's a cutie. Oh, we want to see a picture. All right, Daryl.
All right. Dems in panic mode. We got Crafty Grandma Crispy. classic. Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. Oh, if you, the initiative to repeal the carbon tax is bought and paid for.
Yep.
You ran an initiative the exact same way on gun control just a wee 5 years ago.
Meanwhile,
you can do it.
They have private security with guns.
Yep, exactly. Right? Okay, give up all your security that have firearms. Jay Inslee, your entire security detail? No guns for you.
Not doing it.
Tim Clemenson, a father, a lifelong union Democrat, happily signed all six of these petitions. And you know what, Tim? That does not make you bought and paid for.
Nope.
That makes you a Washingtonian who has every damn right in the world to sign whatever freaking initiative or petition or referendum that you want.
And I feel like coming election cycle, there's going to be a lot more lifelong union Democrats who look at those petitions and they're like, hey, wait a minute.
Yes.
This just doesn't make sense.
Well, and also it is a very American thing to want people to have a say.
Yeah.
Right? And you could say that they have a say based on who they put in office, but there's a lot of parts of this state where their party or their ideology isn't as represented in Olympia. And that's why you have these processes. This is sort of the last line of defense for people who want to push back. And, you know, Democrats, I think, also push through some things that if it was sent out to voters to say yay or nay on, they'd say no, particularly on the taxes front. Mm-hmm. So let me see here. Oh, go ahead.
So we got Sharon Barbour. Brandy, bringing in the money means taking our money.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
More taxes means you're paying more.
Well, and it's not too much to ask that, okay, you say you need all this money to do climate justice, environmental things. Then it's not too much to ask for you to stop disappearing data on the state website that say whether you're meeting your climate objections.
Yeah.
It's not too much to ask that when Susanna Frame, one of the most well-respected reporters in the market, repeatedly asked the governor to sit down and talk about why he's not meeting some of his climate goals, that the governor does that. No, you want the money, but you want no accountability. And so in my opinion, you shouldn't get the money if you don't want any accountability.
Well, they have to fund the study to study how to spend the money.
Fund the panel that's going to study and recommend another panel to figure out how to, and then by the time they're done, half the money's gone.
Yeah.
Well, the money, we spent it on the study. On crime and the poor. Two Ladies Midwest Adventure says, Brandy, can we actually help marginalized groups develop businesses that they can become independent and actually proud of, build up our communities with love and hope? So yes and no. I mean, I have said that I'm very opposed to any sort of awards or anything based on skin color. That being said, when it comes to why am I escaping on the words? Like repaying the descendants of slaves.
Reparations.
I'm not wholly opposed to reparations. I think that if you can, here's my issue with that. Because you had generations of Black Americans who were robbed of the ability to build wealth. So while white, you know, families in the early 1900s and then moving forward, they had wealth that they were able to build on, which made sure that future generations were not impoverished. You had people who were enslaved in this country and they were robbed of the ability to build wealth at the same speed and for the same amount of time. So in my opinion, if you could show that someone is an actual descendant of slaves, I'm not opposed to the idea of reparations to help, especially if something was taken from them, if property was taken from them or something, to help them catch up to the wealth that they could have been building all that time.
Yeah, I will say that generational wealth is a real thing.
Yes.
And it's very disproportionate. But I also will say in 2023, you know, don't just sit there waiting for reparations.
Right.
Be the change that you want to see.
Yes.
That's, you know, at the end of the day, we all got our bootstraps, don't we?
Well, and there's also a lot of white people who never had, I don't have generational wealth.
Right.
I don't have any inheritance
exactly.
Waiting for me. You know, we grew up lower class.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it would be disingenuous to suggest that it wasn't harder for Black Americans to build wealth in this country. But like Daryl said, you know, it's this whole idea of the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what one side of the political spectrum is constantly doing. It's like, well, no, you're never going to amount to anything. The system is just going to hold you down. It's built to hold you down. We're going to, you know, you're not able to get ahead because there was slavery 100 years ago or whatever it is. It's like, well, what are you teaching that person?
That's, I mean, the, was it Olympia School District or what school district was it where
they had segregated classes?
Well, not that one, but they just won't fail kids.
Oh, yeah, because it's racist. I think Portland.
Racist. Is that Portland?
I don't know if there were others that were doing it too, but like you can't, no kid can fail.
Yeah. That is not only allowing, but celebrating people to be mediocre.
Especially when the reason that you're not allowing failing grades is you're saying that it disproportionately hurts people of color.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, soft bigotry of low expectations and that individual, even if they're not going to fail in school, they can absolutely fail in life. Mm-hmm. So you're setting them up to be a failure for the rest of their life.
Yep.
This is common sense stuff.
You got to keep a working class somehow.
Yeah. Okay, downtown Seattle. Jill C. says on the economic development office trying to get people to come downtown because it's green. Jill C. says in the early 80s, as a 16-year-old, my friends and I would drive to Seattle and try to get lost for the fun of it. We'd stop at Pike Place Market and the waterfront and have a great time. I always felt safe. Yeah. Even when I first moved here 15 years ago, we used to go out downtown. We used to spend, and I would never do that now. I would never go to bars downtown at 21, 22 years old. It just doesn't feel safe. Christy said, no need for me to ever go to Seattle. I will stay north of the King County line. I mean, I do, Seattle's beautiful. And like I said, it's got good bones. There's some great restaurants in Seattle. There's some business owners who are really trying their best to stay afloat mm-hmm. in a challenging situation. So I would never tell people, don't go there. Make your own decision as to whether you want to go. I will probably make some trips to downtown Seattle for holiday shopping between now and Christmas. Yeah. But I will be very cognizant of my surroundings. And I have one trick. Well, not a trick. One thing I do whenever I'm in downtown Seattle. I carry this umbrella I have that has a pointy end.
Okay.
Even if it's not raining. Okay. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, you heard it on the whatever thing they were trying to do to prop up downtown. It's exciting. It is exciting down there. Keep your head on a swivel.
Oh, it's exciting in a bad way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's buzzing. It's buzzing.
It's buzzing.
Buzzing in a bad way. All right, Daryl, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks
for having
me.
So, for the record, people will be like, why don't you let Nicole read comments? She never wants to.
Well, Brandy, we're being nice. And that's okay. That's a choice that she makes.
I know. I'm just saying that people are going to be like, why don't you let Nicole read comments?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't want to.
She just has never wanted to. Ask her again when she gets back.
Ask her when she gets back.
I like the back and forth on comments.
I think it helps.
Gives me a chance to breathe.
All right. Well, everyone have a great Thanksgiving. I'm signing out.
Boop. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check, which is going to be a brief one today, so you can get on your way. There is nothing more important than family. And I've learned that certainly this year. And I personally in my own life has had some challenges with family. And I know that sometimes those relationships can be strained. I know sometimes that politics can get in the way of our friendships and family. But, you know, having lost a dear friend at the beginning of the year, having almost lost my sister, I can tell you that there's really nothing worth putting a wedge between you and your family. So as you gather with your loved ones for Thanksgiving, leave the politics at the door, leave the disagreements at the door, and simply take some time to enjoy and be grateful in their company. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. We will have no live show tomorrow. We will have an awesome episode of Sundays with Subscribers this week, hearing from a woman who turned her life around after addiction and imprisonment and is now launching an effort to tell the stories of other people like her. So join us. Sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month. Maybe you can sign up on Cyber Monday. Help out your local favorite podcast. Undividedpod.com. Daryl, let's leave with a boop button. Boop.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Boop. Gobble.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. Close enough.
Wrong button.